Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being here. Thank you to Jim and Jen for joining us in this episode. We're going to be focusing on looking at both Jim and Jen's roles here at High Five. Jim as the founding director and Jen as our new executive director. And just touch on some points related to both the past, the present, and the future as it relates to High Five adventure education, I think, in a larger sense. The initial question, if we go back to looking at the past, Jen was the first official hire of a new hire. So really, the question to you first, Jen, and then I'll come back to you, Jim, is what drew you to an organization that definitely wasn't fleshed out fully and was somewhat new in the area that we were in Brattleboro, Vermont?
It was definitely a little bit of a happy accident. My husband and I had just relocated to Brattleboro in 2002, early 2002. And I was ready to go and find some work. I had spent a year in Brattleboro not working, helping my family acclimate. And it was time to get to work. So back in 2002, you picked up the newspaper and you went to the one ad, and I saw this adorable little ad, and they probably spent a little too much money on it at the time. But it was just an office job looking for someone who could manage the office and be the registrar and take registrations and help with customer service. And I went in and met an amazing group of people after seeing a very rudimentary website at the time. Just went in thinking, I'll give this one a shot. I had no background in education, adventure education. I had never seen a ropes course before, never been on one. And I thought, what the heck, let's give this a try. It's a pretty small town with a limited amount of jobs. So let's see if I can go help out. I met three people there and came home and told my husband that I was probably overqualified, but it seemed like a really fun place to work. So if they called me back, it was something to consider. And I heard back from them immediately, jumped on the High Five train in February, I think, of 2002. So it's been 22 years now.
Jim, what do you recall from that time? I think High Five was still very new. And there was obviously a growth thought of like, well, we could use some help.
The reason we could hire somebody was everybody else working at High Five, we weren't sure we could pay every week. So by the time we hired Jen, we said, well, this is an outsider. We have to make sure we have enough money to pay her. So that was sort of the milestone. And I don't think I ever shared that with Jen, you know, until about a year later and said, well, Jen, we loved you coming to us. But one of the things that bolstered our confidence was we said, we can pay this woman every week. This is going to be pretty good. Because people before that, it would be, you know, how much money do you need this week? That kind of thing. So it felt like a growth point, like, wow, we're pretty official. We have a stranger in here now that we're going to step it up a little bit. It
becomes more legit when you've got someone else in the room. It's like inviting a new family member in. You clean the house before they arrive.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it was years before I heard that. That was a factor, and that was a concern, that a stretch to actually for me to get a paycheck every other week. Something I noticed immediately, and I, a little bit about my background, which is what I said was nothing that had to do with what High Five did. I started out my career in marketing and public relations in New York City, and then I moved around a little bit and went into financial public relations and started dabbling in finance in that way and got my finance background in that manner, and then moved on to running a graphic design agency. So just had a kind of a eclectic business background. And when I started answering the phone at High Five, there was just such an immediate, wonderful surprise in that everyone I spoke to was so excited about what they were doing. And within High Five and externally, customers would call up. I'm used to customers calling up and being really angry or needing something very emphatically, and to answer the phone and get someone on the other end who was just so delighted to be calling us and excited about us interacting with them or their team. It was just such a refreshing, energizing thing to do. And when I came into High Five, the work was, it was fine. It wasn't my passion. My passion was not entering people into the database or getting the mail or entering bills into our accounting system. But it was just such a wonderful way to spend my day and a wonderful way to learn and start my journey into nonprofits, into adventure education as a whole, into meeting some amazing people I never would have met before who have amazing perspective on life. So it's been an amazing journey.
Yeah, I think our connection began almost immediately, obviously, I mean, in the work relationship of what we needed, you know, the connection we were forming, little did we know 22 years later, it would grow into what it did. But I think it practically started in day one. Yeah, they did a wonderful way, which was nice.
Yeah, this was not my planned journey, definitely.
It's funny, it's like a lot of people in this industry didn't know they necessarily were going to end up where they are currently. So it's you're joining the ranks of just falling in.
Yeah, that's actually a theme that we have always run into. And I have some notes in front of me, and I thought that that's something that we do want to tackle is intentional career development in our world. But also, like others in our organization, my answer would be, you mean I get to do this for a living? I can get paid to do this, to hang out with these really fun people and help them in a way that they can flourish and do the work that they want to do? It's great. It's been an amazing trip.
So let's look at the last 22 years. I think that the development that you've probably experienced from a leadership perspective as well has shifted and changed from the role you started in to the role obviously you're in now. This is I'm adding my perspective to this. Ever since I've worked at High Five, I've often considered Jim, you to be the heart of High Five, and to Jen to be the head of High Five. Not to separate like, oh, Jim, you have no head and Jen, you have no heart, but we're not Wizard of Ozing. But just from like leadership styles being somewhat different, but working so well together, what have you seen in each other from a perspective of leadership styles that you think has benefited High Five as an organization?
You picked up on something that has served us well, and we didn't always define it in a way that you just did, but it has been an amazing partnership in leadership. I mean, there's always that on paper, Jim was the director, Jen was the associate executive director. But it truly has been an amazing evolution of being able to identify that and embrace that. I think every organization should have a head and a heart. And sometimes it's in one person and sometimes it's in two people. There is a book. The author is Gino Wickman. He has a series of books. One of his first books that I read was called Traction. The other was Rocket Fuel. He refers to those two dynamics, the head and the heart, very similarly. He uses the terms visionary and integrator. And when I read that, I went, bingo, that's how we work together, to be able to have that unique ability to have a visionary, that person that has big thoughts and ideas and is able to lead a group of people and then pass something like that or integrate the integrator who can actually take that idea and make it a reality. Every organization needs that combination. If you have one and not the other, you're going to struggle. If you have an integrator that doesn't have vision, you're going to have a problem. If you have a visionary that doesn't have an integrator, nothing's going to get done. We're going to have great conversations and then they're going to go nowhere.
Right. I mean, I experienced it much the same way, Phil, when you say heart and head, and it doesn't mean the other person didn't have the other part. But there were just so many times, and I think there was just a great synchronicity of thought that followed the lines that Jen was just saying, that sort of allowed things. Sometimes I felt like saying, how the hell are we going to do this? And then yet we were very, I think we were so compatible in challenging times and less challenging times that it really just, it created ways to make things happen. And we always just enjoyed working with one another. I mean, I can't think of a person, there is no person that I've worked with as long as I've worked with Jen. And there's been many people I've enjoyed thoroughly, but I mean, there's a special relationship with Jen in the length of time. And I think the way we were trying to connect around the work of the organization in the best manner possible. And that was exciting. I mean, you look at your own weaknesses and what you can't do. And, you know, I always look at the DISC profile it, you know, is a thing that Jen and I are very different on. And, you know, for me to sort of be out there and doing what I'm doing is very much in my style. And then, you know, in Jen's, I'm so low in sort of, I think it's a conscientious piece, which isn't, I'm a very conscientious person, but in terms of, you know, sometimes the attention to details just isn't there. So once we knew that almost symbiotically, it was like, oh yeah, we're gonna take care of that. So our conversations would always follow a flow that sort of covered the gamut of all the things that needed to be done to make things happen. Or, you know, I think during COVID, I mean, you know, the most challenging time we ever faced, you know, could have lost the whole organization. And boy, that just put so much intensity around how we're going to connect and relate and with the whole team, with the whole staff. And I mean, you experienced that along with everybody else. And, you know, it was a lot of it was by design. How are we going to help make this work together? And I think the strength of that relationship that we had really played itself out in a good way during that time period.
But what I learned from you even prior to the pandemic, Jim, was your style is we're always going to put our people first. It is always the people that come first. And it's easy for me with an integrator style or what I am now a DI on the DISC profile, that idea of the first thing you always do is connect with the people involved. Connect. That I learned from watching you and practicing that as you were able to demonstrate the importance of it. We would not have survived COVID if it were not for the people and the culture of Hi5, and to prioritize them at the time was most important, and to make sure that they were okay, both professionally and personally, speaks to the culture of the organization. And again, like you said, it got us through to the other side.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those cases that if you took one of you out of that equation during that time period, I'm not sure we would have survived, right? Because you needed both of those pieces in terms of the connection of the human and also the business model of we need to financially survive this. So different positions that are important that you both played a role in from the leadership perspective that I think was critical.
Well, I remember one time an idea got floated early on in COVID, you know, maybe we just need to downsize, you know, let go X number of people. It's very simple math when you do that, but it didn't address the bigger issue of what we were trying to do with and for everyone, which had been consistent with sort of, you know, we always said we're a boat that rises and falls together. And that seemed good. So that idea was dismissed almost immediately. And all the attention went to the next thing. You know, how are we going to keep everybody getting paid? How do you get benefits keep going? Healthcare is huge for everybody.
I think sometimes we take for granted what we see in our organization as staples of leadership. But I don't know if they are seen everywhere across the board. So I would say something that highlighted is that collaboration, but also the oxygen that you as leaders give to the teams to be able to develop those things. Every one of our products takes years to develop, but there's oxygen growth and there's an ability to, because we'll often get asked at conferences like, oh, how do you come up with these things? It's not like we're randomly coming up with them. They're exactly what you're saying, but we highlight a need. It's you as leaders give us the opportunity to develop those, the answers to those needs. And that's a unique experience, I would imagine.
Absolutely. One of the things that I am especially practicing now or making a priority to demonstrate is giving trust. Where I want to take Hi5 or a foundation of what I hope to steward, I guess is the word, at Hi5 is that we find good people and hire them. We demonstrate our trust in them. We give them enough rope to be successful. That was a weird metaphor. But we remove barriers that might prevent them from being successful. And then we get out of their way. I love research and development. I love hearing that from someone in the office that something's going on or that there's a new mock-up in the Challenge Course Services office on the table. There's a new mini mock-up, or there's a new demo on Phil's desk, or did you hear this? Like, to hear that people are constantly looking to take the foundations of experiential education and take them in new places, or take them in a place that puts another good thing out in the world and helps Hi5 make a little money, that's a win for everyone. And those things excite me. There's a few more. We just launched a product. There are a few more percolating. There's a book there's two books percolating, actually. And I'm just really excited to foster that trust that people are spending their time in a way that bears fruit in that way.
I think, too, it takes that said in the beginning about the integrator visionary piece. It just takes it to a broader audience of everybody. Because that scenario Jen was describing, when you fold in what went on with Challenge Course Services and the catalog folks, Jamie and Krister, they get to that point. Well, how is this going to be packaged? It took a lot of effort and creativity. And I think it was that constant integrator role played out in a much larger way that just, you know, I think ultimately visionary and integrator is one thing, but then when that gets carried over into, you know, the strategic plans of the organization, now that's quantum leap. That's pretty good if we could pull that off with the culture and the strategic plan and all of that is sort of married together. And that's no small thing, I mean, because you can focus on strategic plans, you can focus on culture, but if that culture is one based upon integration and sharing and trust, then how that gets married, you know, culturally to the strategic plan is huge. I think it's a big part of the next future step for the organization.
Masterfully segued, Jim.
It was.
I'm not sure I was supposed to do that.
It was incredibly good. Jim is now the host of this podcast. But we're going to start now. We're going to transition into talking about the strategic plan and the future. So if currently we looked at the present, we looked at the past, but this is the stuff that I'm also very excited about. We had a retreat recently and Jen, you started talking about some of the future plans for the organization and I know strategic planning is in place. So what can you illuminate with thoughts to the future of both High Five as an organization, but I think broadly our industry, because yeah, this is very exciting for me.
Yeah, I'm excited too. So we have, it's a business class 101 concept of the organizational life cycle, a very elementary bell curve. And you can imagine an organization having a life cycle that follows that curve, starting out on the left, building momentum. And the intention is that you always want to keep living at the top of that bell curve or slightly towards up, heading up towards the bell curve. Once the life cycle of the organization starts to proceed down the right side of that bell curve, the plan, I guess, is to prevent that by refreshing what you do and taking a complete look at, is your product or service relevant? Do you have the right people? Is it being managed properly? Turning that, not going backwards in reverse over the top, but swooping down around and starting to head to that, the top of the bell curve again. So I'll move on from the organizational life cycle. We have been exploring the concept of social enterprise. We have always been a nonprofit. We're a 501c3. It has always been a little bit of a head scratcher for us that we do other things that don't necessarily, you would be surprised to find under a nonprofit. We have a building team, but we're a nonprofit. We charge fees for most of our services and goods, but we're a nonprofit. There's always been that little bit of what's something that would better define what we do. The term nonprofit social enterprise is intriguing to us, so we'll continue to go down that path and explore it. I am energized by the idea that some of our things belong in every classroom. And by behaving like a 501c3 nonprofit, that may not be the most direct path. The most direct path could be us believing in the product and believing in ourselves and taking that to a place where we give ourselves permission to say, these products are awesome. They should be everywhere. You should have one in your classroom. Are you going to buy it today or tomorrow? Like almost like a selling. The word sell is not an awful word. So under that umbrella of social enterprise, just like Bombas socks, when you buy a pair of socks, something else wonderful in the world happens. And we are also committing to exploring career building in our industry for various reasons. We have always been a professional development organization. People come to us because they want to learn how to do what we do and go out in the world and do it. That's no longer enough that we can just put ourselves in front of people and then get back to that model of you mean I can do this too? You know, we work with a lot of middle schoolers who always have a great time with us, but would never consider that someday they could be doing what Ryan McCormick is doing or what Phil Brown is doing. And a lot of people who you've talked to a lot of people, and typically one of the first things that you ask is, how did you get here? How did you get to where you are today? And so many of them, including people who work for High Five, stumble into this. This is a very rewarding career that you can take on. And that idea, being more intentional about talking about doing what we do, especially for young people, but of all ages, to be able to lend to not just High Five, but all of adventure education, the idea that a next generation of them are coming along. We have to do that as an industry. We heard a lot about it, Phil. You and I went to ACCT conference, Association for Challenged Horse Technology. The non-existence of the hiring pool for various trades within our world, there are no builders out there. There are very few facilitators or trainers out there. It is dwindling. It's going away. It went away significantly. I think a lot of people walked away from adventure education during COVID. The educational world as a whole is just bleeding professionals. They're just leaving at record paces. And I think we have to drill down and find a way to support that. One of the initiatives that I know will happen is that we are in the midst of a scholarship fund for professional development. People who might otherwise see barriers to doing what we are doing, whether it be financial or locational, we are looking for ways for people to have an easier on-ramp into what we do.
Yeah, and I think that will be incredibly welcomed by a large percentage of people listening. Yeah, it excites me, the idea that there's not only are we getting rid of some of the barriers, because as well, the trainings we offer, they're awesome trainings, but there's a financial barrier that had I not had an employer who could pay for me to attend, I wouldn't have attended on my own. I would like to end this by celebrating you, Jen, and the role that you have as our executive director. Not only as our executive director, but also people may not be aware, but you're the chair of the finance committee for ACCT. You talked about your financial history, but everyone who is involved with ACCT is grateful and thankful for you and your role in that position. Jim, as you see Jen in this new role, as you've handed the executive director role over to Jen, and we talk about the future, what excites you from a perspective of having Jen in this role?
I always think change is good. I mean, I'm thrilled and kind of humbled to have my little founding director role, which I love to say really nobody knows what I do, so it's perfect. But when new energy comes in, and it's, I think, leadership throughout the organization has gotten so strengthened, and I think a lot, Jen has really done a lot of that. To me, I always still come back, and maybe it's the visionary piece. It's you know, how do we touch the world with more significance and value and yet maintain all the richness that got us to where we are today? And I just am thrilled as you look forward and say, wow, what are all the ways that that's going to take place? Because the world does need what we do, because it's so human, and it really does touch and affect people in very positive ways, whether they're young or whether they're old or they're in between. But to be a part of the future and where Jen and the whole staff and team take it is thrilling. And I think that new energy and new ideas and everything needs that. You know, torches need to be passed. It's wonderful when they do pass. And I couldn't echo more what Jen is saying, like the idea of bringing people into the field. Like you said, all of us fell into it. Wait, you know, you think of sports teams, they have farm teams, and they don't fall into it. They're in the farm team, they're getting developed, and they say, okay, now we need you, kind of thing. And I think various parts of the field have served us in that way. Sometimes the year-round camps, all of a sudden the people show up and end up being, you know, people that would be great to work for us. But I just think everything about the future looks so promising and exciting, and I can't wait to see where it goes, and I'm excited to help out in some small way.
We, at one point, were leadership partners. You have become a solid rock mentor for me and coach. Yes, people might not realize what Jim Grout is up to when he comes into the office, but he is there serving as a bedrock and beacon for all that we're about to do.
Well, I walk down the hall and say hello to Phil and everybody else.
From my perspective, thanks to both you, Jim, and also you, Jen. And I am very, very excited about the future, not only for, as we said, High Five, but also for the industry. I think there's your leadership, your stewards of the industry, both of you. And I think the industry benefits from having you both present in this field. So thank you to the both of you.
Oh, thank you, Phil.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks for listening to Vertical Playcast.
And then what about, thanks for listening to High Fives Podcast.
Can you do it?
Okay, try.
Thanks for giving us a good podcast, guys.